All right, let me confirm. Jed, are you with us?
I am. Made it back.
Okay. Yeah. Ernest, I was out there in Mars. I made it back. It's a good thing today. To each of you and all of you, welcome to the Media Biz Power Hour, an educational opportunity for those of you in media sales, whether you are working with your print, your e-newsletter, your website, or all of the above, whether your circulation is paid, controlled, or paid, controlled, or free. There we go. Boom. You are in the right spot. We are here with you. Whether you have a magazine, newspaper, a specialty, or niche publication, we are here to help you drive more revenue and help you win in the marketplace. Over the last 23 years, we've hosted these kinds of educational opportunities. It is not an accident that there's not something on your screen that would simply trigger many-tasking or multitasking. Our words of encouragement are: close your office door, eliminate any distractions, really be able to lean in and make notes. Jed's going to cover a lot of information here for us today. And as he's doing so, the more notes you're making and taking, the more you're going to be able to literally come out of this teleseminar and utilize the tools and the resources, the stats and the data, literally immediately. Okay? So that's always what you're going to hear from us. Jed, just before we get rolling formally, how about some opening words about Media Biz? I'll say a few words about Power Hour, and then we'll formally come in and talk about ad trends and the stats and what they're showing. So how about some opening words related to Media Biz, please?
Sure. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. This is, you know, I always agonize over these teleseminars where I am the primary giver of information. So I hope it's all worthwhile for you all. My name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of Media Biz. We are a company that is devoted to generating revenue for publications. We do it a variety of different ways, some of which we'll talk about later in the teleseminar today. But overall, we really consider ourselves to be partners of publications and work to try to come up with creative ways to grow newspapers, magazines. We've been around for about 20 years. And so we've done many different things, tried many different things, we'll share some of that with you today. I want to thank Ernest, who gives the majority of these teleseminars and does an excellent job concrete things that you can actually sort of go out and do. So I encourage you to check out his the teleseminars that we have recorded that he's done, and also check out the weekly seminar that he does individually. So.
Well, thank you, Jed. Always a pleasure working together over all of these last 10-plus years, and thank you so much to you and your team who always provide all the support and make it all look easy, and certainly thank you so much for your kind words related to Power Hour, to all of you and each of you. My name is Ernest Orienti. I've been in the advertising sales space since 1986, three-plus decades, launched three of my own publications. I was a leader in a billion-dollar media group, and then 23 years ago, back in 95, we launched Power Hour to work with media sales teams, professionals, and companies much like yours. We've now coached more than 2,500-plus advertising sales companies, their sales teams, in 13 time zones around the world. So there's this beautiful reoccurring theme of what it takes to be successful in our media sales space. And then as Jed shared, that yes, we do run an advertising sales academy every Tuesday. On Monday, you get an audio message, tools to use, things to read, templates, and so forth. And then on Tuesday, we come together and we talk about those. So it's like we're meeting here. The difference is it's open mic, and we freely exchange and handle questions by email and by voice. We just wrapped up week number 257. So come into powerhour.com, and you can learn more about that. Shifting gears, we have lots we're going to be covering. Jed is going today to be talking about ad trends and results. What are the stats showing? We're going to talk about conclusions he's seen over the last 12 months. We're going to be weaving in geography, frequency, circulation, delivery. But before we do that, we're going to begin with the fact that Jed, Media Biz, their team, literally track hundreds of thousands of print ads every year. And from their research, they are able to talk about which advertisers have been successful this past year and which have underperformed. He's also going to share with you conclusions and factors that have the biggest impact on the response to print advertising. Jed, drum roll, please. So formally, the floor be yours.
Blue. Just use blue ink. Everything will be fine. Use blue ink.
Let's go.
So Ernest touched on it, and just to kind of set the table, what we have done more and more of here at MediaBids over the past 10 years is response-based advertising. And what we mean by that is we put a unique tracking mechanism in every ad that we put out there. So in a lot of cases, it's phone numbers. In some cases, it's URLs. We've also done a variety of other things like, you know, text message responses and QR codes, and if you can think of it, we've tried it. And so our main goal is to basically be able to show our advertisers how they are performing in print publications. Because what we have found, and my guess is that you have found this as well, is that more and more advertisers have dismissed print as a medium that is not really worth their time and money, primarily because they have begun using other mediums that are able to kind of validate their purchases and validate what they're doing in a much more seamless way. So, for example, you know, I'm sure you all run up against advertisers who are using Google, right, and have allocated their budget to Google that maybe had been allocated to print. The way we combat that is we by tracking these ads, we're able to show advertisers what they produce. Now, in a lot of cases, we're out there buying ads and then charging the advertiser based on the response that they generate. In other cases, we are paying publications only based on the response that they generate. That part is really sort of academic and doesn't really matter for the purposes of this phone call, as much as the basic idea that we are able to attract advertisers to print that otherwise would not be spending money with print because, and this isn't rocket science, because we're able to then show them what their print ads are doing. It's a stupid little thing. It is not difficult to do. It is not any sort of, you know, high-powered technology that we're using. It is something that every single person on this call could do, like tomorrow. And I will tell you, it makes an enormous difference because no longer are you trying to get advertisers to, you know, to hope that they get response. You're able to show them that they get response. And if nothing else, this is what has happened in the world of advertising over the past 10 years. This is what the internet has brought upon us, right, is this idea that everything should be measurable. I should only be paying for the things that I do that work. I should not have to take any risk, right? It's not fair. It's not right. I don't wake up in the morning and say, you know, this is great. How can I make it so advertisers pay less for advertising? You know, I think to myself, you know, how can I get them to spend more in print? Not necessarily how do I get them to spend less, but the only way that I can get them to spend more is by showing them that print is working for them. So I just want to sort of set the table there and just sort of going into this, I think it's important that everyone kind of understand that, you know, there's been a seismic shift in the world of advertising. And I know everyone to varying degrees has felt it over the past, you know, 5-10 years. But but it is, you know, with the companies that we work with, if we were to say to them, you know, we want you to buy, you know, 50 quarter pages in these publications because we think they're a really good deal, they would laugh at us, right? And the reason they would laugh is that they just have no capacity to sort of understand this idea of I'm going to buy space and then hope that it works, right? We have to give them some guarantees. We have to give them, even if MediaBiz is the one who's buying the ads, we have to give our advertisers some assurances that it's going to work, and that if it doesn't work, then they're going to pay us less than we had hoped. So it becomes now, again, I'm not suggesting that you should all go out tomorrow and, you know, tear up your rate card and just start charging all of your advertisers on a response basis. I don't think that's the case. But by tracking results, by tracking response, what it enables you to do, even in a rate card basis, is to validate the money that someone is spending. I think that's the main point.
Mm-hmm. So let's pause right here. And Jed, when you say that hundreds of thousands of print ads you're purchasing on behalf of advertisers and clients, can you give us just a little sense of that, you know, that sort of volume velocity? I know that I've heard in the past how many ads you're buying. I've heard you talk about the number of calls that you're tracking and so forth. Could you give us a little sense on that?
Sure. I mean, so we work with about 9,000 print publications, and we place ads in almost all of them, in every issue. In some cases, you know, I think our highest is we have, you know, about 25 ads per issue in some publications. But the normal rate is we have about 3 to 4 ads per issue in in almost all publications. We what we do is we track the results from all of those. So in some we try to change up the ads that we're running. So we might be running, you know, Dish Network, DirecTV, and, you know, Omaha Steaks, you know, 1 week in some publications, and then in others we're running different ads. What we try to do is to essentially just run the things that will produce the most money, right? That's our litmus test. We want MediaBiz wants to be successful, but you know, we also want the publications to be successful. So we want to we're always looking for advertisers that work. We get about 25 proposals from advertisers who want to participate in our program each week, We usually accept about one or two of those. So we turn away, you know, about 95% of the advertisers who come to us. And the reason why we turn them away, and we'll talk about some of these criteria later, but the reason why we turn them away is we either don't think that their product or service will do well with our audience, and our audience are print readers. Our audience are, you know, primarily older people. And so that's that, you know, we just don't think it's going to work that well, number one. Either that, or we don't feel like they have the capacity to sort of answer calls or deal with customers in an effective way, and that's a big part of all of this. When you're tracking results and you're looking at how an ad performs, you know, we can only take it so far, and you as a publication can only take it so far. If you know, you can get lots of people to call to order flowers from your local florist, but if the local florist is in a bad mood and does a poor job answering the phone, then, you know, she's not going to make any sales, you know, and that reflects badly upon you. So you want to make sure that, you know, so we spend a lot of time making sure that the advertisers that we're that we're dealing with are pretty good. And, you know, sometimes we get fooled, mm-hmm. but for the most part, mm-hmm. they're all pretty good at dealing with customers. So that's a big criteria for us. But I just, you know, I think it's important for, you know, and I always, you know, I just got back from a few publication conferences in San Diego, and I kind of shake my head at some of these seminars because, you know, we have advertisers who are coming to us. We do nothing to try to get new advertisers, right? The only uh-huh. thing that we do is we have this information. Right, we know that if an advertiser, you know, if an advertiser is going to spend money in print, we can generate these kinds of leads, and so, you know, I feel like that's we're in a pretty unique position in the world of print right now, but it's a unique position that doesn't need to be unique. You know, if more print publications sort of took the time to track the results of ads and to basically show advertisers the kinds of results they're able to produce, I feel like, you know, there would be more people would have the experience that we do, where it really becomes a matter of sort of finding the right advertiser than just sort of selling to anyone you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just pause here as you're listening to Jed talk about his view and their view, right, of publications, of ads that are being placed, lots and lots of those ads. He mentioned 9,000 magazines in general, 3 or 4 ads per issue. You can quickly do the math. And there, and Jed, yeah, there's, I mean, literally, yep, Jed.
Yeah, we round numbers. I mean, we place, you know, about 700,000 print ads a year. I mean, is what it comes down to.
Okay, and then on the inbound call side, you're tracking hundreds and hundreds of thousands of calls, if not into the millions. Is that also fair to say?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's about, in 2017, it was about 1.6 million.
I'm sorry, 1. How many?
1.6 million phone calls.
1.6, gotcha. Okay,
yep.
1.6 million calls. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and it's spread out over, you know, in 2017 we ran a total of about 150 advertising campaigns. You know, we have some that generate a huge amount of response and others mm-hmm. that don't. And you know, usually it's based on sort of the product that they're selling. I'll just start going through a few of them. I think it'd be interesting to people. I mean, our sort of number one advertiser over the past 12 months or so, 15 months, has been a company called Physicians Mutual, which they sell dental insurance primarily to seniors.
Okay.
This is an advertiser who I never would have guessed in a million years would have been such a successful advertiser. But it's kind of an interesting one, because they, you know, even though they're selling a product which is not, you know, not something that you would imagine a huge number of people would want, they do it in such a way that makes people feel very comfortable. So when people, you know, the offer in the ad is not specifically price based. It's you know, they offer free information. They're very friendly when you call to try to get more information. They don't put on a hard sell, and that seems to have really resonated with people. They generated now these are payable calls, so these are calls that all lasted longer than a minute. They generated 45,000 payable calls last year, which for a campaign like that is pretty solid. Their conversion rate, and this is something we'll talk about more in a few minutes, but their conversion rate, which is the number of calls, the number of people who call who convert to, in this case, a lead, people who requested more information, is 75%. Which is just astounding, right? Like, I can't overstate how impressive it is for any company selling anything to generate a 75% conversion rate. And this isn't because of something magical that MediaBiz is doing. This is because of print, right? This is because the kind of people who are calling are serious about the product or service that they're calling about. They're educated. They've read the ad. They understand why they're calling. You know, the conversion rates that we see in other mediums are so far below this that it's just hard to overstate it. You know, for example, you know, online, we do a lot of online ads as well. We see about a 0.05 conversion rate. So less than 1% of the people who are clicking on an ad are actually doing something, right? I mean, and so, and that's not unusual in online ad circles. I mean, you know, if you are running an online campaign and you're able to get 1%, you're really hitting a home run. I mean, we're generating 75% for Physicians Mutual. For Omaha Steaks, their close rate prior to the holidays, November and December of 2017, their close rate, so people who bought, was about 55%. But what's even crazier than that? What's even crazier than that is that the average order for the person who bought was about $175 on a $49.99 product, right? So it meant that not only did half the people who called from print buy, but out of those people who bought, they typically place three unique orders. So they bought for their mom, their sister, and for themselves, right? Or, you know, I'm making that up, but they bought for three people, right? As opposed to just buying and getting, you know, sort of the absolute cheapest thing. That those types of numbers, like if when we tell other companies that have a product or service like, let's say, Omaha Steaks, that we generated, you know, a 55% conversion rate to sales for Omaha Steaks, there's no, you know, it completely changes the conversation. You know, it's no longer about sort of if they want to do it, it's a matter of how much will they pay. Right, and that's where print is in a unique position, where print can really command higher prices than other mediums because it is so effective in the close rate, you know, and it does just sort of lead to more dollars.
So let's again pause here as you're listening to Jed talk about the success of advertisers, the success of ad response. This directly relates to what we sell and how we sell and how we justify the results. Assuming, right, you are tracking, assuming you have a phone tracking ad number in place for your advertisers, you cannot lose on that side. But if you don't have it, you're flying blind. You've heard that from Jed and myself for a decade. Now, we've never wavered, Jed, on that particular piece. And one of the things you've been talking about in the past year, and that is, you know, what campaigns have been successful. Omaha Steaks, unbelievable close ratio. The Physicians Mutual, 75% is unheard of, right?
Right.
Any observation about what ads have underperformed on the other side? Any sense of what we might glean from that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's certain categories that we just cannot make work, and I think it sort of goes to a broader point. You know, auto insurance, life insurance, home insurance. We have tried 15 different campaigns with big major companies like, you know, Allstate, Nationwide, and we can't seem to get response for insurance ads. The same is, you know, for a long time, satellite television was really a foundation of all of our campaigns. I mean, we had 5,000 dish ads running at one time, and we still have a lot, and it performs okay, but you know, the consumer appetite for satellite television appears to definitely be diminishing. you know, I think there's just more and more people who are who just don't feel the need to pay for television, whether they watch Netflix or they, you know, watch YouTube, whatever it might be, but they're not that excited about it. However, DirecTV recently came out with a new offer, and just in the past 4 months, it's already exceeded its 2017 call level. So it went from, you know, it went from about 25,000 calls in 2017, and it already has about close to 30,000 calls. And the reason for that is that it has a new aggressive offer. And this sort of brings up a point with all of these underperforming advertisers that I don't think I can sort of overstate, and that is how important the offer is to the success of an ad. You know, the advertisers that we have that are doing well are by and large are doing well, and because they're offering something that is competitive across medium, right? So when Omaha Steaks gives us an offer, the first thing we do is, you know, go on Groupon, go on, you know, Google, make sure that it's not, that we're not being undercut by, you know, five other offers that are out there, because we have found that people who are responding to print ads, maybe because they have more time to research, maybe because they're just that kind of person, the kind of person who's reading a print product is just more invested in, you know, sort of research and educating themselves on something before they buy. But whatever the real reason may be, what the end result is that if we're even a dollar off, the amount of responses will plummet. So it's shocking to see. And there are people, these people are all way, way better consumers than I am, you know, because I don't, you know, I'm not careful enough to get a dollar better deal on something that I'm buying. But lots and lots of people are, and it really makes a big difference. So I've always thought that, you know, if I was a publisher of a local newspaper or an ad rep in a local market, you know, one of the things I would do when an advertiser wants to get a better deal, or an advertiser is looking for a way to lower their advertising costs, I would be willing to do it in exchange for a better consumer offer, right? Because I think what happens is if you're able to offer a better consumer offer than someone is receiving anywhere else, the ad is the biggest determinant for success. So if you can incentivize the advertiser to do that, then I think in the long run it really, really pays off, because the advertiser is going to just keep revisiting the mediums that work for them, and so if you're, you know, even if it means, you know, a $2 less offer on Flowers or whoever it might be, you know, consumers are watching, and it's scary how closely consumers are watching. One of the things which I wanted to bring up, which we've discovered, it was sort of a revelation to us in 2017, was the idea. You know, we always used to believe that for print readers to make the leap to an online purchase was very, very difficult, and something that they weren't really comfortable doing. And in 2017, we found out that we were wrong, that is not the case. that again, as long as you have a competitive offer, people will make the jump enthusiastically from print to online. So many of our campaigns, in addition to having unique phone numbers, also have unique URLs. And what we have found is that the unique URLs, generate about a 32% increase in response, from just having a phone. So rather, there are a group of people out there who are reading print publications, and when they want to respond, they want to respond via an online mechanism. They want to fill out a form or go to a website, whatever it might be, or make a purchase online. They would rather do that than picking up the phone. And that's something that's really, I think, changed over the past, in recent past, because it didn't used to be like that. We tried, many, many unique URLs, 5, 7, 10 years ago, and they weren't that successful. The bump in response that we got as a result of running them was pretty minimal, whereas now it's large. And I think that that's something that is pretty unexpected. It was unexpected to us because it sort of goes to show that people who are reading print, it's not as though they're reading print because they don't want to use the internet. They do. They're comfortable using the internet, and especially, and I think that, the wisdom, going back in time was that older people were less comfortable using the internet. But even for some of our products which are focused on seniors, like A Place for Mom or Acorn Stairlifts, we're seeing a lot of online traffic just as a result of print ads. So which is sort of, I think, kind of interesting, because it's, these are primarily senior citizens who are responding to these ads, and they feel more comfortable responding. When given a choice between a phone number and a URL, they choose the URL.
Mm-hmm.
So
let me just insert just a question here. And for those of you that are listening, again, fascinating data and stats that Jed is sharing, and including this 33% response tied to a unique URL. I am curious, and this relates to leakage. Let's use Ford Motor or Xerox, or if Xerox runs an ad and you have a unique URL, is that a standalone landing page and that you can track, and then a standalone and a dedicated toll-free number that you can track, is that standalone? Or if I stay on that page, can I now click and work my way back into the Xerox or the Ford Motor Company, whatever it might be, into their main site and get lost and lose that trackability? You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ways of doing it, but the way that we prefer is the URL that is in an ad is one that we own. So if mm-hmm. we're doing it for Ford Motor Company, we will buy something like, buy Ford or something,
mm-hmm.
Then it's usually not, the premier URL with that name in it.
Right.
we buy some, some off-brand URL, so to speak, and then we put that in the ad. We are then able to track what that person does on the Ford website. Now, where it gets really cool is, and some companies are resistant to doing this, and this might be more than sort of the average kind of, single publication wants to bite off, but pretty easily you can insert code, usually on unique pages. So you usually do it on a thank you page that comes after a purchase. Very often you do it in a thank you page that comes after someone fills out an important form or a sign up. And that code basically just kicks back a signal to you that says, hey, it happened. Joe signed up. Right? And so at the end of the day, you can see exactly how many people did these certain things. And I think that the most we've ever done has been three, like a newsletter sign up, a registration on the site, and then mm-hmm. most common for us is a purchase, mm-hmm. where we you know, where when someone gets a thank you, that thank you page for making a purchase for, you know, whatever it might be, for, you know, requesting an appointment with a place for mom, for example, we get a notification that an appointment has been successfully created. So that, that just lets us know that essentially, you know, a sale has happened. It's not a perfect science, and a lot of it, if you're looking to track beyond that initial web visit, you know, a lot of it depends on getting information back from the advertiser, which in some cases they're very happy to do. In other cases, they feel like it's proprietary and they're resistant to doing it. But at a minimum, right, at a minimum, you can see who's visited their page, that initial page, right? So you can see, all right, well, we drove, you know, X number of people as a result of this one ad, you know, and so, yeah, so it's, it, you know, and that again is extremely valuable information. It's
So if I can just insert, so, you know, the reason I was asking about the standalone page is that once they move off that page, you know, how do we follow them? And then once they move off that page, they're no longer going to use the unique toll-free number, right, from the landing page or the domain that you reserved for that Xerox ad or Ford Motor or whatever it might be. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's no doubt, right? I mean, there's no doubt that if someone really wants to fool you, they can. You know, I don't really know how often that happens. I'm sure it happens, but I don't really have any way of kind of tracking it. You know, we do see, you know, we do have some landing pages that we use where we will insert a unique phone number into the landing page. You know, and that generates some phone calls, but usually not very many. So I have a sense that it's a problem, but not a huge problem.
Right. Okay. All right. Good enough. And we'll continue to field the questions coming in. Thank you so much for being here as part of our MediaBids Power Hour. We've got lots that we're covering. Simply, any questions you have, send those to Ernest@powerhour.com or just simply hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here. Jed, one of the pieces we wanted to talk about here today, geography, frequency, circulation, delivery methods. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the, you know, one of the things that we try to track is we're always trying to look for sort of the secret formula for any one advertiser. And you know, we have found that there are certain geographies that where different ads perform well. You know, and this is important for individual publications, I think, because the idea that, you know, that a lot of publishers have, that I talk to anyway, where it's like, you know, if I could just get, you know, Ford Motor Company to advertise with me, if I could just get these guys, I know it would work well. And I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I think that there are very unique buying habits in different parts of the country. And one of the things that we've found is that, just to sort of throw out some examples, is that in the Northeast, we can't sell anything consistently or at a very high volume that isn't senior related. So, and that includes cities that are relatively young, like Boston. You know, for whatever reason, you know, direct response products like Omaha Steaks just do not do well in the Northeast. Whereas those same products in the Midwest, the Southwest, and Florida do very, very well. California is like a different country because the response that we get to items in California is almost completely different than it is anywhere else. But for the most part, you know, our our sort of highest producing publications tend to be in cities in the Midwest, like Columbus, Ohio, Chicago, Lincoln, Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska. These are places, I think, where people depend on the local paper maybe more than they do in a place like the Northeast. And I think that as consumers, they also just react differently. Some of the best results that we get are from small dailies, where I think that they're just a more integral part of sort of the news cycle in that town than in larger cities. So dailies for us produce about 32% of all the results. Weekly publication network. So there's through every press association and publication association usually uses us, and we have many ads running with them, and they produce about 23% of our total results. Weeklies, I'm sorry, 25%, and then 23% come from just individual weeklies. So we still get good results from individual weeklies, but weeklies in some parts of the country have been pretty hard hit over the past few years, and they're just fewer of them than there used to be. There are, about 15% of our results come from monthlies, from essentially magazines. And part of that is just a function of the fact that there are just so many fewer, issues that they're putting out. A daily newspaper might be running, 40 ads for us in a week. A monthly might be running 4 in a month. So that's a big difference in terms of the number of chances you have to get a response.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and those are some of the factors that you're taking into consideration when you're buying ads. Certainly, from that perspective, is there anything else that we should touch on, the difference between free CERC, controlled CERC, paid CERC, right? There's different sort of drivers for each of those audiences, yes?
Yep. So one of the ways that we sort of measure publications is to try to figure out how many thousands in circulation it takes to generate a response. And one of the things that we see, and it's probably not that surprising, is that our best performing is paid circulation, which is comes in at about 2.7. It takes about 2,700 circulation on average to generate a response, as opposed to free monthlies, which are 4,200, so that's sort of the other end of the spectrum, which isn't necessarily terrible. I mean, one of the things that we oftentimes think about is that, if I was a publisher, what's going to be cheaper for me to have free circulation, not have to deal with all of the headaches that go along with subscribers, or to just do it free. So even though the response from free monthlies is significantly worse than it is for paid dailies, their overhead is also a lot less. So I mean that might end up being a more the more efficient way of producing papers. It's sort of out of my domain, but it's not necessarily related to it's not necessarily one thing we can't take into account is just hard costs. books, right, that are on the newspaper side.
Right.
So anyway, weeklies, you know, paid weeklies, about 2,900 for every one response, and free weeklies, 3,400 for every one response. So,
got it.
The paid stuff definitely produces better, you know, and I think that, you know, I think it makes sense. I think that for, you know, in many cases, the publications that people are buying, they're probably reading more consistently.
Now, in years past, Jed, I've heard you say, hey, when agencies come to us, when key media buyers come to us, hey, they pay a lot more per lead for a print lead than they do a digital lead. Are you still finding that true in calendar year 2018?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I can't overstate this, you know.
Please.
I'll just use some examples, right? I mean, you know, the, you know, Omaha Steaks, if you run an ad online, they pay about $1 a sale, right? They're paying our publications, you know, $14 a sale. If you're Dish Network, they pay online about 50 cents a click, right? And they're paying us about $20 a phone call. You know, so it's the differences are enormous, right? We're able to generate, you know, we're able to command much, much, much higher rates than anyone is paying online, in radio, and in many cases even TV, which traditionally has been sort of the granddaddy of being able to command higher response rates. And the reason, you know, the reason for that is what we talked about earlier, and that is that print just has such a phenomenal close rate. And you know what print doesn't have, the problem with print is the volume, right? Is that if someone wants to generate, you know, 1,000 responses tomorrow, it's a lot easier to do that online than it is to do in print. So that's what print is, sort of the battle that print is constantly fighting, and you know, and to some extent losing, right? Because readership in many publications appears to be going down, and the readership of the digital offerings that publications have sort of put so much time and effort into have not necessarily picked up the slack. And this is the one thing that, I mean, not the one thing, but if I was a publisher today, this is the thing that I would be most concerned about, is that all of the wonderful things that I just told you about response when it comes to print do not necessarily translate to response when it comes to print online. So by that I mean, you know, the online versions of print publications, whether it be websites, you know, e-editions, tablets, whatever it may be. We run a lot of online ads in many, many different formats, and the audience response that we see from print online doesn't correlate to what we see in print offline. And that I think is the biggest challenge. Right? Is how can you take this incredibly valuable audience that you have that's offline, and it really is an incredibly valuable audience, and it's an audience that really no other medium can come close to who they're serving, and how can you take that, and as time goes on and more people depend on digital delivery, how can you take that audience and move them into a different medium that is going to respond in somewhat of the same way that you're currently seeing in print. That's I think that's the the challenge for the future. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that is going to that's going to prevent publications from sort of making a digital shift effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then on the other side, you're saying, but Ernest, in the end, the print is doing really well, generating really great responses. So it's one of those, be careful what you wish for on that side, because when you really look at side by side, the print ads are over-delivering far, far more than the digital. And it's often the case, like I'll scrolling through a Facebook feed, and I know that there are ads embedded in there, but, you know, those are sort of intrusion ads. I don't want that. I don't need that. Maybe Facebook has guessed that that's what I want. I've never clicked on one. And when I said to somebody, you know, when I say that, you know, ad sales teams, can you tell me an ad that you saw today? Can you tell me an ad you saw since this morning or over breakfast? And I get these long pauses, and I said, that's the point. Now, it's different. If I say, I am looking for a vocal powder ski by the name of Mantra, that's exactly what I want, right? And I'm going to go there, right. I'm going to see the organic searches, and I'm going to see the paid searches that should match what I'm looking for, that I want a powder, Mantra, vocal, ski. That's a need, right? And demand request is very, very different. But the online model still really struggles. It's that perception versus reality. And here we are talking about ad campaigns and ad professionals. So any maybe closing words? I know we're coming up on the top of the hour, but any closing words or any advice that you might share to those who are listening related to two, three, four things they should be doing immediately and going forward in order to be successful with their ad sales?
I mean, you know, I said it earlier in the teleseminar, but, you know, I think that tracking results is every day that goes by, it becomes more and more critical, and it can change the way that you interact with your advertisers. And I think the most important thing is, and again, this doesn't, I'm not necessarily speaking to how you should actually charge people. That's there's lots of ways of doing that effectively, but really, when push comes to shove, it doesn't matter how you charge people, what the bill says they're paying for. What matters is that you're able to show them that for whatever amount of money they're spending, they're getting results. You know, as print audience, as the audience that is consuming, you know, the print products that you're creating continues to shrink, and there's no doubt that it is, because there's just more and more people who are sort of consuming news digitally. You know, as that continues to shrink, the being able to validate your audience becomes just absolutely critical, right? Because in order to play the game, in order to compete with all of these digital offerings, that's really the information that you need to do, that you need to be able to offer your advertiser. You know, we've said it in other teleseminars, but advertisers don't do it themselves. They're lazy. They expect it to be done for them. You know, publications, you know, for many years and even today, sort of feel like that's none of their business, right? They produce a publication, they put an ad in, their job ends when that paper gets delivered. And it doesn't. You know, and that's the thing that's changed, is that your job as an advertising outlet really has now extends beyond the delivery of the ad, and it extends all the way through the sale and even beyond, even the repeat customers. I mean, you want to get as much information as you can, because if you're able to get that information about one advertiser, you can do an enormous amount with it, right? If that advertiser decides not to spend with you, not to buy with you, you can take that data and you can walk down the street. And that's exactly what places like, you know, Google and online ad networks, that's what they do all day long. Right, that's the name of the game, and having the data is the biggest part of the is the most important thing, because if you find someone who is not, you know, if you have a customer who's not happy with spending $50 for every new customer that you're bringing him, I guarantee you that you can find someone else who will be thrilled to spend $50 for a new customer for, you know, when you're able to generate it. It's just a matter of being able to show them. And I think that's really, if there's anything to take from this, it's, you know, that's it. And then and I also think, and this is a little more subtle, but I think it's really important for publications as time goes on to think of their audience as not just this sort of group of readers who are out there unnamed. You know, you really have to think of your audience, your readership, almost like a club, right? These are people who, you know, if you try hard enough, you can figure out kind of what they're looking for, what they want, whether that's geographically or whether it's as a result of, you know, of the niche that you're serving. There are different buying habits for different groups of people. We're oftentimes shocked that, you know, of an ad that will do very, very well in, you know, in a publication that demographically looks very similar to a publication that's just, you know, 100 miles away, that there'll be dramatically different results in an ad, in exactly the same ad, in almost the same position in a publication. So it's you know, it really goes to sort of the consumer buying habits in that particular community, and also how people are sort of engaged in your publication. Gather data and use it. You know, and we're, you know, here at MediaBids, I mean, we spend an enormous amount of time trying to figure out what data is relevant and important, and what's the best thing to show publications and advertisers. And we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it really, there's an enormous amount you can do with it, and it can be extremely helpful.
Beautiful. Hey, we've covered so much ground here. Jed, thank you so much. The wealth of knowledge you have on one side, the ability to have advertisers come to you, on the other side, to be able to see those results. I truly say this humbly, that you have the most unique and the most specific ad view, or view of the ad world, that I've ever seen. I truly believe that. It's amazing. I mean, you've got, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of ads on one side, and literally hundreds and thousands and millions of phone calls coming in on the other, and it's impressive to hear your summation. And each and every year when we come back to do this, I'm in awe. I really am, and I'm so appreciative that you would put all this together.
You know, I make all these notes for these things, and then after about 10 minutes, I sort of lose track of where I am. So if anyone has any questions or disagrees with me about something, or you know, please let me know. I'm always open to suggestions, and I'd be happy to try to help in whatever way I can. So my email address is on the MediaBids website. We also send a follow-up email, so I encourage you to reach out to us if you disagree with anything you've heard today.
Or like to clarify any of the points as well. Thank you to each of you and all of you. We really appreciate you joining us here today. Go to MediaBids to learn more about all of the work that they're doing, helping media teams bring additional revenue and provide the kinds of results like we're talking about. And then in turn, take a look at powerhour.com. We have a wonderful sales academy every Tuesday. We'd love to include you as well. Jed, thank you so much. To each of you and all of you, we'll see you next month. Take care. Make it a great day.
Sounds good. Thank you.